RunAsRadio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 111 with guest Buck Woody, recorded Thursday, May 21st, 2009. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. You're listening to Run As Radio. With me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, everybody. Richard, how are you today?
I am very, very well, and I'm post-tech ed. Missed you, man. We really missed you. People were asking, where's Greg?
Yeah, I'm really sorry I couldn't make it this time. I felt really bad. The whole week I was wishing I could be there. I just had, as I told you before, I just had some commitments that I had to fulfill, and it just happened to conflict. And so, hopefully next time.
Awesome. Well, you know, it's the way it goes. We had a really great speaker idol, had an awesome finals. It was a smaller show this year, pretty IT heavy, actually. Lots of IT folks there, and I had a chance to talk to everybody, as many as I could, but it was really a big, long conversations, lots of great recordings. And the whole fishbowl, we didn't have a fishbowl this time. We were up in separate rooms. Right. Every slot for every panel, for every tech talk, sold out before we started. They were all booked. Wow. First time ever. Great. We were up to our eyeballs.
Very, very cool.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Being IT heavy, it had to be an interesting, of course, not having been there, I guess I'm asking you, it might have been probably some really interesting conversations going on with the economy the way it is and the face of IT continuing to expand and grow, yet the money that can be thrown at it in a lot of cases is contracting.
Yeah, people are getting really smart about the cash. There was a lot of conversation around Win 7. The keynote was all Win 7. You know, I think folks are pretty focused on that. And Server 2008 R2, also important stuff going on there.
So. Sure, sure.
I think we're, and also I really feel like Microsoft's getting virtualization right. They're really getting there. These latest incarnations and using Win 7, it's got great virtualization. We saw some great things there, all around efficiency.
Very, very cool. Virtualization. I mean, I remember jumping into virtualization when virtualization was new, and it's a whole different breed now. It's a whole different ball of wax.
Yeah, I started using virtualization on the test side of things, running old platforms and stuff. Remember we ended up having a dozen different machines to test all the different configurations?
Oh, yeah, and a bazillion different VMs floating around everywhere that nobody could keep track of, let alone patch or really know what was on them, huh?
But now I'm actually having the debate or whether I should be virtualizing my web farm, and that stuns me.
Yeah, you can do a lot. You can do a lot with web farm virtualization for sure.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Anyway, let's. We could do a whole show on just what happened at TechEd. Let's dive into this conversation with Buck Woody. I'm going to give him the quick version of his bio. I know we're all itching to get to this conversation.
Yeah, I think we started our debate early on.
Yeah,
this one.
We were already at it before the recording was on. Buck Woody's been working with information technology since 1981. He's worked for the U.S. Air Force, added IBM reseller as technical support, and for NASA, as well as the U.S. Space Command as an IT contractor. He has worked in almost all IT positions, from computer repair technician to system and database administrator, and from network technician to IT manager. But it is the database field he always returns to. He has been a DBA and database developer on everything from Oracle system running on VAX to SQL Server and DB2 installations. Buck has a business degree and several industry certifications, including the MCSE, the MCDBA, and the BrainBench DBA. He's the author of over 300 SQL Server articles and 4 published SQL Server books. He is the site personality on informit.com's SQL Web and was the president of the Tampa SQL Users Group for 5 years. He was awarded the Microsoft MVP Award in 2006 for SQL Server and started to work with the SQL Server team at Microsoft a year later. He has over 20 years of extensive professional and practical experience in computer networks and network design, experience in design and management of business and technical systems, as well as marketing and training those systems to the user community and corporate officers. Welcome, Buck.
Hey, Buck.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. With that introduction, boy, I can't wait to see what I'm going to say.
Based on our pre-conversation, I think it's ready, fight.
All things are possible. We bumped into each other at TechEd, as we often do.
Yes, and you still owe me a shirt because you spilled coffee on me when you bumped into me.
Well, you know, I'm prone to that. I tend to come from behind. And you showed me a Coplex project, and I just want to mention it because I had every intention of spending a half hour talking about this, but we got sidetracked on a pre-conversation that I want to do more.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, the Codeplex thing I showed you was something I call the SQL CMS for Central Management System. In SQL Server 2008, there's a feature called Central Management Servers, CMS, which is a little different. I actually use those features, but the basic concept here is just to set up a box in the corner that will manage and monitor your other boxes. It's just a sort of a central place to keep scripts, to keep track of your servers, to run queries, and I'm leveraging all of the cool new stuff in 2008, so you don't have to switch your whole network to 2008. This box in the corner is 2008, but it can talk down, if you will, to 2005 and 2000 systems. They can read more about it, and we can talk later, but you can find more about it at SQL CMS, that's SQL CMS, dot Codeplex, CodePlex.com. That's Microsoft's open source location, sort of our source forge, so to speak. But you can look up that project, and I'll take all comments.
Thanks for that, Buck. And I think it's a cool project. And if folks want to know more about this, by all means, look at it. If you want, we can bring Buck back to dig into this further. Send us an email, info@runasradio.com, and harass us about it. Because before we got started today, we dove right into careers. We just started.
Yeah.
It was immediately a punch fest about careers. So maybe you better do your preamble again, Buck, and we'll see. We'll light this thing off.
Sure. Well, you know, I've heard a lot lately. I mean, we all know the tech side of what we do and so on, but you probably know someone that's been laid off or whatever, and other people that are looking for work. And even in good economies, you see people looking for a job, and you probably get this question: should I be a generalist or a specialist? And so the discussion turns into generalization versus specialization in IT. I think, like most of us, I started a long time ago. We actually didn't have computers. We just shouted ones and zeros at each other. But then when we got those computers, you know, I built my own. I modified the Unix operating system to work on it. I wrote my own stuff. Actually, one thing I wrote was an assembler, and then went to C to write the rest. But the point is, I wrote my own software, wrote my own instructions, trained people how to use it. I mean, you couldn't get more generalist than that. And then as time has gone on, I've specialized. And I mean, if you think about it, the database administration space is a specialty. However, even within the database platform, there's administration, there's development, there's business intelligence. And so in my mind, you're seeing a lot of companies now that are asking for generalists, not specialists. You know, we've always been paid more to be specialists. So there's an argument there for being a generalist, but where should you start? Should you start as a generalist, or should you start as a specialist?
I think in the perfect financial world, companies can hire specialists to do those point jobs, if you will. But in an economy like we're in today, and I know having managed IT departments in difficult times, working in financial services about, 6 or 8 years ago, it was a pretty tough time in a software company, and we, you know, downsized an IT department in half, but had to maintain the same level of service, you know, and we didn't have the specialists. We had to change, and there was a pretty massive culture shift that had to happen in that IT department to go from being very specialized in a very specific area to generalizing and covering more of the bases individually.
Yeah, so there's the reaction I had to the examples just like that. So back in the day when I worked at the Space Center, we had these guys that were IBM technicians, and they did nothing, and I know this is going to blow your mind, but they did nothing but work on these certain kinds of printers we had. We had these printers, and they were the size of, like, I don't know, a Ford Fiesta, and it took like a degree to change the ribbon in these things, and they had literal ribbons. And they would come around and service these just hundreds of IBM printers we had at the Space Center, you know, fairly large installation, pure IBM environment, mainframes, the whole nine. But the idea was these guys were paid very well because they just knew everything. They were kind of like the copier repair guy. They just knew everything about those. When the PC revolution took place, this was back in the early 80s, when the PC revolution took place, I saw these guys not able to retool. They literally, a lot of them retired or left and went to another job, because when those printers became moot, we had switched to OS2. you know, and gone a lot paperless now, and there was laser printers and so on. And these guys literally couldn't adapt. So I guess, is there an idea that the generalist is more stable but paid less, and the specialist is paid more but in more danger of becoming a dinosaur?
I also wonder about the yield for the business here, because the natural consequence of generalists is that you don't go for, in theory, most optimal solutions. The generalist trying to manage those printers probably would have spent more on supplies, wouldn't use the ribbons as well, would have taken longer to get stuff set up, would
That's
have had a tougher
point.
Time getting things up and running. I'm thinking about the return on this. That the consequence of generalists is that you're going to get, 75%, or let's use Pareto's and say 80% of the results on all of this technology, where your specialist could have eked that other 10, 15, 20% out.
Oh, I'd go even higher than that. I mean, you can look no further than the database area. Most of the DBAs that I work with, I would say most, unfortunately, in the SQL Server world, SQL Server is not their primary line of business. They do everything. They're asked to do the network, they do Exchange, they do the web farms. As a consequence, their databases are just riddled with bad practices. Now, part of that's Microsoft's fault, you know, our fault, in that we don't enforce those practices out of the box. Say in an Oracle system, you have to study for months just to figure out how to install and run the thing. I'm exaggerating, of course, but the point is, there's a higher bar to get something set up. You almost have to do it right to do it. Whereas in the Microsoft world, next finish, and you're up and running. That's a blessing and a curse. We get a lot of market space because you click next finish. The problem is, then the database runs crappy, and everyone says it's Microsoft, when in fact, the person's not following best practices to begin with, because they don't have time. So the generalists, I see them everywhere, but you're exactly right. We look back at the database, and things are just not done anywhere near the best practices. I've started a series on my blog, which is blogs.msdn.com/BuckWoody, BUCKWOODY. And on there, I've got a tag you can click called Best Practices, where I talk about just some stuff that, you know, most DBAs consider 101, but to the generalist isn't 101. This is rocket science. So I think you're right. You can actually gain a lot by specializing at least a little. I mean, is that the answer then?
Or do we bring in the specialist, as consultants when we need the tuning there? But the guy with the full-time job is a generalist who just know, the best feature I think of a generalist is knowing when you need help.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point.
It keeps going through my mind that IT workers, you know, want to be specialists, and some want to be generalists. A lot want to be specialists. They want to dive into the technology. They want to geek out on it. They want to know as much as they possibly can. The flip side of the coin is that you have IT management, which is responding to yet another dimension of this, which is probably the business management, which quite often the IT manager is going to be faced with a situation where your budget is being cut in half. And we have to do a layoff, for example. And certainly a lot of companies have gone through that. I know I've had to manage through that. If you can get 85% of the coverage at 50% of the cost, that's a business decision, and there's some risk management that goes into that. So I think those of us in IT, and I came up through IT as a doer and a hands-on IT guy, sometimes like to think that we can define the marketplace in this way, when really it's quite often just defined by the bigger circumstances.
Yeah. I mean, you go out and look at our cars, right? I mean, do I maintain my car as well as some guy that's really, really good with engines does? I mean, my uncle, I remember he's a thorny character anyway, but his cars were just absolutely perfect. And, you know, I'd stop by to see him or talk to him about something, and he'd come out and say, "Let me check your oil." And I'm thinking, "Oh, no." And he'd pull the oil stick, and here's what you're doing wrong, and you're not doing this. This is basics. And to me, I'm like that business owner. It's good enough. I turn the key, and I get to the place, and, when the radio doesn't work anymore, I buy a new car. I mean, that's the American way, right?
Absolutely. You know, there's another element to this, and I'm battling this as someone in the business of cultivating new people into this industry, that we don't care about cars anymore,
right?
Because we've always had them. We are the natives of the car world, right? We've
They've
always had a car.
Commodity. Yeah.
They're a commodity item, and I feel like the kids that are coming out of school today are feel the same way about computers. They are natives. They've never known a time where they didn't have a personal computer. And we all are immigrants. We remember the time before the computer. And I think it's one of the reasons we're so enthusiastic about this industry.
Well, in my day, we didn't have no fancy computers.
Oh, man.
It was a little bird that chipped out the message on stone and flew it over to the other computer. Yeah, no, I agree with that. The people are looking at computers more as a utility. So then does it become more incumbent on the software developers like Microsoft and Oracle and Google and all the rest to hide that? And is that what's happening with cloud? In other words, if I need a database now, should I even buy a database platform and hire a DBA and do design work? And all? Shouldn't I just go up to Microsoft and say, I need a database? I mean, we have such an offering. And so does Amazon and Google and a few others. Sure. Is that the way we're going to go? Are we going to go true utility computing to get rid of generalists and specialists and just go to a use-based society?
Hasn't SQL Server headed this way for a long time? Haven't we seen on with SQL Server less and less need to tune and tweak, and so much care and feeding happens automatically? It allocates its disk when it needs it. It processes its translation log when it needs it. It writes its own query plans optimally.
Yeah, there's a best guess you can certainly do on this kind of thing. But as I mentioned at the top of the discussion, what we end up with is that works for a long time until it matters. And then when it matters, there's a cliff that it falls off. And people say, well, the product isn't performing well, ergo it's the product. And then you go all the way back to the design. If you type create database foo and you hit enter and you press F5, you'll create a database with all the base settings that you need to do. That's not possible in a lot of other platforms. And the other platforms, you have to say on which drive, at which growth interval, and so on. Because you have to do it, quote unquote, right on those other systems, you get a better design from the outset. But with the Microsoft product, you get something up and running right there. And you're fine because, you know, Microsoft has made a best guess about the query plan, the drive layouts, and all the rest. But at some point, that hits a wall because of the design. So I think that what you're talking about is both a blessing and a curse. When you're a generalist, you're able, and this is terrible to say, but you're able to do it wrong.
Well, and for 80 or 90% of the use cases, you know, just creating a generic database and just starting to work with it and do that will work just fine, and it will never fall off a cliff. It's that 10% where it does fall off, or, you know, the 0.5% where if you don't really do super design up front, then it's going to fall off a cliff right away for you.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a trade-off, right? As if we make it easier to use and a commodity type of interface that the average user can read, you know, skim through a chapter in a book and then just forget about it, then that's going to sell software. It's going to enable people to use it that may not be able to use it otherwise. It's going to enable people to do things in business, and it's going to allow, I mean, it's almost super generalization, the cloud and doing these things. We're enabling everybody to be quote unquote a generalist. Another layer to the equation.
You know, what worries me about the cloud approach is that I feel like, and I have no evidence of this yet, I feel like we're setting ourselves up for the big lie. The big lie being, don't worry, it'll scale. Right.
Yeah,
there's always
that question. You know, where we're seeing the adoption rate in cloud, and that not just at Microsoft, but I've done numbers on Amazon and a few of the other cloud offerings as well. Where we're seeing uptick is actually not at the big companies that need that kind of scale, at least scale up. It's in the smaller companies where there is no IT talent. There was a firm that I read about the other day in New York City that wanted to do some interesting things around music, sort of a mashup of the way they were handling music. It had to do with kind of an iTunes play, but a little different flair. They parted it out, and they looked at getting an IT crew in there to write them the application and the storage and all that stuff. It's going to be like $140,000 for them to get the project up and running in about 6 months, which is, you know, that's fair for a large IT project. They thought about it. They contacted a cloud vendor, and they said, how long would it take you to do that? And the next week, they were up and running and were profitable within a month. Now, that's an aberration, right? Not everybody that gets some harebrained idea is going to be able to, you know, use the cloud and make $1 million. But the point is, they no longer cared about IT. It literally went away. And they're a small outfit, meaning, you know, just a few guys there, and the storage isn't super huge and so on. So I guess I'd push back on that question and say, is the scale even needed? Will there be a mix? Will there be a cloud in the building that you control, that you scale? Right. And I mean, when you say cloud, I mean, that's such a loaded term anyway, but
yeah.
But you control that there in your building. But then this literal cloud out in the cloud becomes something that a small business just says, hey, look, I just want mail. Give me some mail. Here you go. Here's your mail. Okay, sure. I need word processing. Okay, here's your word processing. So then what does the computer look like on that desktop? Is it just a web browser? Is it a network appliance? Is it a full PC? I mean, that's the kind of questions we run into there. And who maintains those? Do they just become like a phone appliance? They just call the local AT&T store and say, bring me out a new terminal? Is that the way that works?
Well, not this week. But, you know, this is exactly the same argument we just had about SQL Server, too, which is that,
yeah,
you know, in 90% or 99% of the cases, the base configuration is sufficient.
Yeah.
I mean, I could even argue a further step that attempts to tune before implementation usually impair the implementation.
Yeah, right.
It very much can. Yep.
So, and the same thing with cloud computing. It's not going to matter until it matters.
And yeah, that's a good point.
There's always been a need for commodity software, commodity platforms, and a one-size-fits-all approach to computing. I mean, and that's going to continue to be that way. But that doesn't mean that that's all there is. Right. We don't have to just have generalist type of platforms, generalist type of people. There will always be a need in certain areas for specializing and for, you know, custom platform and for building something from scratch that works really, really well for a specific application.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that brings us back around to a discussion of, you know, us. So, you know, we're talking about how other people will use software. We don't use software. We make software work, right? So in our career field. So where do we fit in all this? And the question comes back around to generalist versus specialist. And I'm wondering now if it's not an argument of generalist versus specialist, but perhaps generalization and specialization. I mean,
where's
do you spend a little while as a generalist? Do you deep dive on a topic that you like for maybe a year or two at the most? Then you pop back up for air as a generalist for a bit and then dive back down into another specialty or the same one again. Is that a better approach? And if so, where do you start? Do you start as a specialist or do you start as a generalist? Which is best?
I always think you need to know, is there anybody who can really survive it as an IT pro without some core knowledge around networking? And core knowledge around the network infrastructure of your company, you know, where the different tiers of your applications live. Like, those are just all fundamental bits of knowledge. And isn't that the starting point? Because if you don't know the map, who cares how good you are getting to the destinations?
Yeah, I guess that's true. Although I know a lot of DBAs. I'm working with a guy right now who's struggling with aliases. And it's a firewall issue, and it has to do with the SQL Server browser service that's, you know, that parses out where you need to go to the right instance based on a certain port in TCP/IP. His port's being blocked, and so when he uses an alias, it fixes it. I mean, you can basically think DNS, right? But but he's really confused about, you know, why that's working. I mean, he's hung up. He's got the fix.
Exactly.
But he's hung up on why that's working, and it's because of this dearth of knowledge of networking. Maybe, you know, a long time ago, one of the things on many of my cert tests used to be, you know, you had to compute a subnet.
Right.
I don't know a lot of DBAs today that can compute a subnet.
But there's a big difference between knowing and, you know, when we go to IPv6, all the subnet stuff goes out the window anyway. But
yeah, that's true.
But I think you should know how to do that. Knowing how to configure a BGP router, different ball of wax, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you believe that that's important in every discipline in IT.
If you have a 10 or 20 person IT department for a small corporation, for example, not everybody needs to know how to do BGP. But you know, if you take the one extreme, which is, you know, kind of the classic semi-passive aggressive kind of extreme of IT, which is, you know, this is my specialty area. I know the phone system. I know routers and that kind of thing. I'm not going to teach anybody else to do it because I'm quote unquote protecting my job, right? You know, I'm going to make myself valuable to the company by being so specialized and being the only person that can do this. They can never afford to let me go.
Yeah,
I've seen that before.
That worked out well for the dinosaurs, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I was just getting ready. I pushed back so hard on that.
Yeah. So
I have never once, every place I go, the first thing I do is I start sharing. I put all my scripts up. I talk to people. I give briefings. I mean, I'm talking internal. I've done it everywhere from my first jobs all the way to here at Microsoft. And I have never one time lost a promotion, a job, or any goodwill by sharing. I've run into the people you're talking about. Just tons of time, little fiefdoms.
If anything, you probably got the job or the promotion or the move that to something that you enjoyed even more because you did that kind of thing.
Yeah. The little knowledge fiefdoms to me are silly. And they're insecure. And the other thing is I've found that when you do that, you become such a specialist. And you become so insulated that the business starts losing the vision for why you're valuable. And if I could tell anybody what's the best career advice for an IT person, in my mind, it's learn the business.
Absolutely.
Learn what your business does and care about it. If you walked up to your boss and say, hey, I noticed in the Wall Street Journal yesterday that we lost some share because of this particular thing. You know, I think there's a particular piece of technology that might shore us up in that area. When that person got up off the ground, you know, having fainted after what you said, they'd probably march you right to the manager's office and say, this person has an idea, let's talk it through. And you're instantly in a different stratosphere than you were before.
Ultimately, it's not the technology that solves the problems, it's the people, right?
That's right.
People can create problems and people can solve problems. And
it's just a
lot of choice that goes into that. So,
absolutely. And I found that people that are generalists, by the way, as another aside, tend to be less religious about their technology.
Right.
I run into Microsoft's pretty unreligious. We don't have really this idea of don't use anybody else, just use us. Now, you know, we have a large market share, so we can do that. But the point is that I've usually seen more Apple and Oracle bigotry towards Microsoft than the other way around. In fact, at Microsoft, you know, most people carry an iPhone or have an iPod. I had a Mac on my desk. We write we're the second largest shop in the world. The last metric I heard, we're the second largest Mac development shop in the world behind Apple. We have more Mac developers than anybody except Apple. So the point is, I found people who are more generalists, and you could certainly argue that Microsoft is a generalist company since we do sort of everything, that they're less bigoted about a particular solution. It's just a tool, right? It's just a tool.
We have a tendency in the world today, I think, to be very bipolar about things. You know, you're either a Mac or you're a PC, or Switch. You know, which one are you? Choose one or the other. I'm both. I use both. I use both all the time. I enjoy both of them for different things.
And I was very pleased to see that when I got to Microsoft that they don't. As a matter of fact, it was funny. When I started in the SQL Server group, writing SQL Server 2008, I used to ride the bus to work there in Redmond. And I had an iPod that I had won at Oracle World. So I had a big Oracle logo on the back of an iPod, and I worked at Microsoft SQL Server. So I just thought that was kind of ironic.
All right, guys, we're coming down towards the end of this thing, and I think we're all in violent agreement about career direction here, that you need generalist skills, but that it's in your best interest to also have a specialist skill. I want to throw another twist into this too, which Ted Neward said this ages ago on .NET Rocks, that, a professional developer is someone who picks up and tries out a new language every year. Is there an IT equivalent to that?
You know, Microsoft facilitates that, don't they? I mean, isn't that kind of part of their culture, is that people, you know, they're going to do one job or be focused in one area for a while, but don't they sort of hand you off, or there's almost an expectation that you will migrate onto something a little bit different?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're supposed to, if you're in there's many teams there at Microsoft, obviously, but if you're in a production team, like I was, you're expected to ship your product. So you're going to have at least whatever cycle. Microsoft SQL Server is on a 3-year cycle right now. So they, if you come into the group, they kind of expect you to ship that product. It's bad form to leave before then. But after then, there's always what we call the great shakeup. Everybody always disappears to the four corners of the wind. Since there's a lot of standardization, as you can imagine, it's okay. People can pick up somebody else's code and move on. It's done in a very standard way.
Right.
You're absolutely expected. I've had 3 jobs at Microsoft in the 3 years I've worked there.
And from a culture standpoint, I mean, I think Microsoft understands the value of the type of people that they employ are the kind of people that will get, they're really smart, very bright people. They'll get bored if they have to focus on the same thing year after year after year after year. You can get, you know, run through one big cycle and run it off.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's true in a lot of companies, not just Microsoft. I mean, I worked at some of the best jobs I ever had were as a generalist. Having to grab you never knew that day what you were going to be working on. That excites some people. Other people are horrified by that. They'd really sure. like to know when they come in the morning what crisis they're going to face. And right. I think for those people, if you're that kind of person, you kind of lean toward the specialist, but it can be a trap. I think that you should pop up every once in a while. Make sure your specialty is still relevant in the general scheme of things. You can be so concerned about indexes and performance tuning that you don't pop up and realize something like some automatic engine could just take care of this for you. And you see the writing on the wall, or it could go to cloud, and you better become somebody who knows how to point your company towards solutions rather than just technology.
Yeah, you definitely make a point sure. there, which is you're busy tuning a database that nobody's using anymore.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, you don't want to end up with your career having to retire because all you knew how to fix was big, ugly printers.
Oh, boy. All right, so hey, let's do something different. Are you ready? So IT generalist or IT specialist? Vote. Ready? Go.
I'd go generalist.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I'm a little bit of both.
If I had to pick. and again, the reason why is I would say that generalists are stable. See, I'm a DBA at heart, and DBAs are naturally paranoid. You can always tell a DBA because when they walk into a room, they look for the exit. I go for stability over, you know, deep pay. You get paid a lot more to be a specialist. I mean, if you're going to know sure. all the internals of the SQL Server engine and you can come in and find out the bitmap layout of the index on the GAM and, you know, all these cool technical terms, they're going to, wow, he's smart. He can make us go. And they'll give you money. But you'll always have a job if you say, well, I can get that database up and running and I can set up your mail server.
Yeah. Well, and you made another point here, which if I want to put my own spin on it, is know where that company makes money, and it's almost never you, right? If you actually know where the company actually makes its living from and you support that, then you're beneficial. When you're not doing work that actually helps the company make money, you're pretty much expendable.
Right. My view in a down economy especially is that generalists tend to be very, very valuable employees. Not generalists in everything, but, you know, you have several generalists that overlap each other, so you have some good redundancy, right. And that the real, real specialists are great consultants.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you do get fired and you're a specialist, start consulting, right?
exactly.
Yeah, so then are you saying, and I'm going to put words in your mouth because I don't want to say this, are you saying that they're the cockroaches of the IT world? They're just going to survive the nuclear holocaust?
Well, there's no guarantee that you're going to survive the Holocaust. I guess somebody could come around and step on you. But if the only concern that you have is radiation, then maybe that's it.
So you heard it here first, folks. Run As Radio says you're a cockroach.
Nice. Thanks for that, Buck. That's good.
You know, I'm always good for a kind word.
Oh, boy.
Maybe we should have talked about SQL CMS.
Yeah, maybe we should. Maybe we should switch over to that topic now. There's no cockroaches in that.
Well, I think, you know, this is it's a topic fraught with opinions. So I think if listeners, if you have opinions, then be sure to let us know. We'll be interested to hear what you think about this too.
You bet. Send us an email, info@runasradio.com. Gentlemen, I think we'll call that a show.
That was a great conversation.
All right. Thanks, guys, for letting me come on.
Thanks for being there.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.